Yes. Just for the record, we just had roll call before we started the recording. So as of right now, I'm going to ask basically it's Brittany, Lance, Sarah, Jen Scott, and Jen Donahue, as well as Ed Hell and myself, Patches Hill, in this meeting from a board perspective. So we are at quorum, so we will continue to meet. So did not notice we did not have a recording device before we started. So just want to clarify that. Do we want to also ask our additional guest here?
Connie Hendricks Elementary. Deputy
McNeely. Thank you.
Sorry, should we? We should congregate to a smaller area.
I'm so sorry.
Debbie Hunt.
Oh, Debbie Hunt.
Yes.
Yeah, attended last. Oh, okay. Hi, sorry.
Maybe yeah, you guys have to move up.
Yeah, come join us.
There's no way we're going to hear with this Broadway show behind us.
Here we go. All right. First order of business will be approval of the minutes. And at this point, I do believe the recommended action would be to approve unless any modifications are needed.
So I do have a modification, and I don't know how much attendance matters, but Michelle was not at last month's mm-hmm. board meeting. She's listed as being mm-hmm. present.
Thanks, Brittany. Did not catch that. So we'll modify that. Any other modifications?
I can note to make that modification, but I can't actually modify the minutes from last meeting.
That'll be fine. We'll okay. modify it. So noted, and we will, before it's posted. That. And as posted or as modified, are we in agreement that we could move forward? If so, I would like to have someone call the motion
to approve.
Second.
So if we could move forward, we're going to basically, I'm going to ask us to vote on that. And if there's any current people that would like any more discussion on that, please let me know. If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Lance, did you vote too? And Brittany online? I didn't hear you.
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Passed unanimously. All right. We are going to move into public comments, and at this point,
first, we're going to make a motion to adjust the agenda.
Correct.
To move the head of school report to beginning of old business or to the end of the where do you want to move it to?
I would say the beginning of new business.
Okay, to the beginning of new business, because Janet Owens is giving the report and she's not here yet. So I make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Any abstentions? No. All right. We have next on the list with no public comments, right? We said no public comments and none came in that the school's aware of. All right. So we will move on to the, let me see here. I want to wait.
You want to wait on the financials?
Can we wait on the financials for a few minutes? Sure. We have, and then could we wait on the foundation update because Joe is not here yet? And then, so why don't we do another modification to move them until after new business?
Okay.
Anybody?
So moved.
Yeah. So moved. All right. A second.
Second.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Nope. It passed.
All right. I'm sorry. So we're moving Sussex Academy Foundation and financial reports to.
Till the end of the meeting. Right before we go into executive session.
Since we're going into committee reports, I have a question from A, Executive Nominating Succession. We should have closed our appeal for board applications. And so I'm wondering, how did we do? How many applications came in?
That was what was going to be reported tonight. We had, I think it was
nine
total that came in. We sorted through those, and based off of both demographics of locations, basically where they were, making sure we have a balance of people and backgrounds and everything. What I will do after tonight's meeting is I'm going to send you an email that will include all of their applications. It will also include the nominating committee's top four choices for the two positions that we will be filling going into next year. The committee basically met and decided that based off of two people basically coming off, that's kind of what we would do, is we would like to give the board, based off of a set of criteria, that we would present four names, and from those four names, we'd go down to the final two. Any questions on that? But that was the idea behind what our committee met and discussed. You got anything to add, Jen? I think that was pretty much it.
So you're considering those whittling that down based on geographics as well as kind of professional?
Yes, both.
Acumen.
That's what we did last year. Mm-hmm. Have at least, I think it's, they tried to keep that as the, is to try to make sure we have a balance of different backgrounds of,
you know. You have someone from like Eastern Sussex, mm-hmm. like, but my area, Ocean, yes. View, Bethany?
Good.
Okay. Yeah, because I think, you know, it's important to remember.
We've had Western Sussex.
It's important to remember that, like, the biggest two, you know, buckets of kids come from Indian River and Cape. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that we're, you know, at least represented there in those two areas. Good. That's
always one of our, at least it has been the few years that I've been part of the committee, has been to make sure that we cover all the areas, because different kids come from different areas, and then we want to make sure we have coverage in areas. So as people roll off from an area, we look at that, but we also look at background of the people that applied to see what we need to add based off of the skill set that's also coming off. Because, you know, we've got legal, we've got technology, we've got medical, we've got teacher, we've got law office, mm-hmm. got all these different areas and backgrounds. We've got people that are parents with small kids and older kids, and we try to take all that into account.
Yeah. Do you know, have you gotten an indication from Chris that he wants to do emeritus, Chris Moody?
Well, that's one of the things we would discuss at the next meeting when we get to that point, because next meeting is going to entail whether or not anyone is up for renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that's resigning,
mm-hmm.
You'll also vote.
You mean allowing them to resign?
I always say, why do you have to vote on allowing them?
Joking.
Mm-hmm.
President,
vice president, and then
that's at the next meeting.
Be part of it.
Mm. That's a big meeting because we have to do the we're going to vote on the budget too, right, Brittany?
We have to vote on the budget. We have to vote on the plan that backs the budget, because that was one of the things we agreed that would happen. Mm-hmm. We have to vote on the executive board. We have to vote on the actual board members. And then we have to vote on, we probably will have a few executive session items that come up as well, so that we may need to take mm-hmm. them. We always have something to.
Yep. Okay.
Does that make sense? Any other questions on that? I think those were great questions. And that's pretty much the committee's report for tonight, of kind of where we felt like that would be. No one else? If not, then we'll move in. We'll skip the finance because it's tied to the monthly financial reports. And
I can just give an update on CBOC. It's not really tied to...
I forgot y'all did have that. So go ahead. Yeah, give that update.
Yeah. So last week we had a CBOC meeting. I really just reported on the same things I reported at the last board meeting. Our financial reports, I showed them the unit count and draft budget. We did talk about the calendar for next year. So CBOC meets quarterly And it really is just three meetings a year because we don't meet in the summertime. And no one on the committee had an issue with continuing that, you know, calendar setup. But I did just want to bring it to the board and make sure, you know, everyone was still good with that setup before I schedule meetings for next year.
So continuing with three meetings.
Yeah, quarterly in the school year.
Do we feel that that's enough based off of the past 2 years? And I'm asking, board decision. I'm just asking what y'all think. We have monthly meetings where we discuss it except during the summer, but I'm just asking.
Well, I guess the question is, where does the bulk of the work happen? Does it happen in the CBOC or does it happen outside of the CBOC meeting? And then at CBOC meeting, you're just reporting out to the persons that are required to be there per the state regulation.
I think that, yeah, I don't think that any real work gets done at the CBOC. I think it could, but I think like engagement is very low. Like, I would say like one meeting this year was well attended, but this past meeting, other than me, other than staff, I think there was only one person.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I really think that it's just kind of checking a box at this point.
With that said, then three should be enough. And I don't think the calendar or the what you're recommending is any concern of anyone's then, right?
So yeah.
I think we move forward. That, again, that's just a clarifying question to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Okay. Well, that's all I've got.
All right. outreach. I don't know that they have met, so we would move to buildings and grounds. So that would be Lance and.
Can we just talk about outreach for a minute?
Yes. Yeah.
Because I feel like, so have they not met at all this year?
To my knowledge, they have not.
We need to change that because outreach is important. Like when we go to report on to the higher parties, like for instance, when we go to make any sort of a charter change or any sort of application change to the state level, outreach is a very essential piece to that. We need to be able to show with data what we're doing to try and get more diverse populations into our school. So, I mean, we got to figure this out.
Who is the one that handles the scheduling of the outreach committee?
Is it Lauren still?
Yeah, she's, and I can talk to her offline and figure out, because I do believe that professionally she's been very busy, so I don't know if it's one of those things where maybe we could just talk and see if it's a fit.
And perhaps someone else is tracking the numbers, like maybe whoever in-house is like, you know, when we host an open house and when we have events at places, like that sort of thing. Maybe someone else is tracking the numbers. I don't know, but it's really important that we're doing that.
Yeah, I could reach out to Lauren and kind of see where that committee stands, because I don't know if they're meeting and we just haven't heard from them as a board or if anything's going on. So I'll follow up with Lauren and check in on that. But on the flip side of that, you know, I think there's a good portion of what we do that's not just from that committee, it's from the school itself as far as.
Yeah.
So I think it's a coordinated effort amongst that. But I don't know, are you aware of anything that the school would be doing in regards to that that would be any different? I think your normal processes for outreach, like for school choice, would be, but that's a normal cycle thing that y'all do.
Is there any tracking of the data though, Janet? Like, you know, Jeannie used to track the data.
It's not been tracked this year, but it used to be tracked.
Yeah.
And that's not on Lauren's plate either.
So no.
That's why I was saying, I think a part of this is we need to determine what is tracked from the outside and what we're doing externally, but what we're doing internally. Would you be willing to take that back to Eric just to make sure it goes back to him? Because in his absence, I think you're kind of filling in. Now, are we ready to move the buildings and grounds?
Buildings and Grounds, Lance and Ed, and anyone else that wants to chime in on that?
I don't have any specific updates, but I have been in contact with the HVAC contractor that we use on both schools, and he's given me some recommendations on things that would help out for future school years to help reduce cost and provide some efficiency for us. So I'm sort of gathering those together and hopefully have some ideas that we could put forward into next year's budget.
Okay. Is that tracking in line with the work that y'all did, the spreadsheet that Ed put in, like together that would track what was going to be coming up for replacement anyway? Is that, I'm just making sure I'm drawing a correlation between what you're saying and what we've discussed prior.
Yeah. So the thing that Ed and I have put together is the spreadsheet that essentially we're trying to figure out a way to combine both of the spreadsheets together and align, because those long-term reserves were done at different times. So we're trying to like normalize it and put it all together into one, because it needs to be tracked together. We don't have two different budgets for different schools, but we can itemize those things out. This is different than that. This isn't like replacement of systems. This is more of like efficiency and the ability to like control the thermostats remotely with like a Wi-Fi type offsite controller. For example, over the wintertime, he had to come in and manually reset 48 different T-stats all the way around the whole school to get to get that set. So it takes a lot of time to do that. Plus, the T-stats are just set and they don't get changed. So if we had the ability to program that, we could turn the heat down during the weekend, or if we're off for a week, we could turn it down remotely, fire it back up remotely, save a lot of time, and probably the energy savings that we would get out of it would pay for it probably in a year or two. So
what you're doing is you're trying to figure out how much it's going to cost for us to implement that system.
Yeah.
And I misunderstood. So you're talking proactively doing things as opposed to reactively, which is the other, the spreadsheet is really the reactive piece of what we don't want to happen. This is the proactive piece to say, hey, we should step out ahead of this.
And it's a great idea.
It's a very good idea. So yeah, thank you all for that. So
yeah. So I should have some information put together in a spreadsheet before we go into budgeting, and then also have ROI calculations or estimates associated with that. So we would have something to base it off of.
All right.
Michelle, what would the timing be for them to give you that number to be able to include it into the budget?
I would like it as soon as possible, since we want to present a budget at the next board meeting. And I also have some facility costs from Andy on her list. She had the roof of $85,000 all the way up to $279,000. And I'm looking at the big ones. She was also saying that the secondary parking lot needs to be resealed and new striping. And the quote range from $36,000 to $99,250. That's a big
difference. We have a family who's a paving company who would do that much.
Yeah.
So do you need better numbers for that? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, these ranges are really large.
Like if you have a list, would we be able to like get it to Lance and he can maybe give us?
Yeah, I could forward this to Lance right now. If I have his email address, I'll send it right now.
Yeah, that'd be great. And then we could take a look at that and finite that down so that we have a trade partner picked out or a vendor picked out with a number so that we can then put that in the budget. I was holding off on the roof so that we could do it over the summer. So it wasn't going to be in the middle of school year, and then we could have it in the budget.
Okay, could you put your email address in the chat?
I'm emailing it to you right now, Michelle.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
I could do the governance if we're moving on.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's do the governance, but separate that out from the policies that we were going to discuss tonight that are further down.
Well, we haven't met since our last board meeting, but our next committee meeting is June 6th. And at that time, we're going to be finalizing policy 204, which is the board member ethics. We just really need to add the fiduciary duty. And also 801, which is the head of school duties. We've given that draft to Eric for his input just to get an idea. Hopefully both of those will be ready for vote at the June meeting. And then I don't know if we'll be able to redraft the school activity fee, which is 404, in time for June. I don't know how, I know you had meetings for that whole, was that a committee that you met?
For the
school activity fee?
School activity fee was a strategic planning committee that we had some time ago. And one of the recommendations was for us to modify and or discuss modification of the school activity fee.
Okay, well, we can take a stab at it for our next June meeting. And then if we want to bring it, if it's ready, we'll bring it for the June board meeting.
Eric was going to make recommendations. I don't think it's in his report. When we get to that, he was going to make recommendations to the board based off of that so that we could react to it as part of the committee meeting when we meet.
Yeah, because at a minimum, we would want that policy approved
for next year
and in place to go into any handbook updates for next school year.
Committee decided that although we will implement on the plans, we wouldn't fiscally impact the families going into next year because of the late meetings and such that have gone on, so that they would adopt the policy with the intent that it would take place in the following school year.
Okay.
So we would implement on everything in the plan, but we wouldn't necessarily
change the dollar amount.
That was the agreement that kind of came out. Good things that they've looked at doing there in regards to some of that.
Okay.
I don't want to steal your thunder, but
no, it's very brief what he's put in here about that. So
the one of the possibilities is saving from the yearbook costs that are associated and maybe buying yearbooks on major years like senior year, eighth grade year, kindergarten, fifth grade, that sort of thing. Take that money and that could be rolled into something like an activity bus. That's the initial recommendation. And then from there, be able to discuss additional cost savings that come out of that. As it looks right now with that cost savings, the first year we would be able to go in and fully take care of the activity bus and the cost savings from not buying yearbook for all the children. We would not move forward with a athletic fee because that's something that we kind of discussed as part of this whole process. And then we would also potentially as part of this be able to take and the first year we would leave it where it is, where it's the same, it's a different amount for you at the elementary school than it is at the high school. But going forward, we would go with a unified activity fee cost across the board, which I think is going to be the $225, and it would just be the normal fee for everyone, regardless of age. And each year you pay into that a percentage of that. If you're in second grade, you may not get a yearbook until fifth grade, but they're going to take that money out and set it aside so that each year we're just setting aside so that we can kind of grow a fund over time to be able to. Does that make sense? Kind of. We'll dig in at the next committee meeting, but that was some of the recommendations that came out of this committee.
That's all I have for governance.
And before we move forward with to our next thing, because we have another board member that's made it, I want you to announce for recording so that people can.
Joe Shell, present.
Lord Emeritus. So thank you for joining us. Next on our list is, see the agenda here.
School performance.
So Mr. Moody, I don't believe we've met. I don't believe he's met any on school performance. So we would continue to move on. And So we would move into old business. Is that
right? Unless we want to do the head of school and all that stuff now.
Head of business is first thing under new business. So old, no old business, right? There's no, and no. All right. I think so. First order of business was new business, and we will actually, we modified and moved it over so that you could do your head of school report.
So Eric left me some notes before he left today, and then he asked me to add some things about testing.
You have to speak up. You got some competition.
So, been really busy the past couple of months. Eric took a group of kids to DSU at the end of April, and they actually participated in a youth congressional leadership conference. Congresswoman Blunt Rochester and Senators Carper and Coons, they were both there. It was really, the kids were fantastic. He said it was a really nice event, and the kids represented very well. The following Monday, he actually accompanied Mr. Elmer, and they took some kids to the Del Dot Bridge Building Competition and did fantastic. Our 9th and 10th grade team scored third overall, won $750 in cash prize for the school. 11th and 12th grade scored second overall, and then won a $1,200 cash prize for the school, so that was really cool. Our high school play, the Mamma Mia production, was at the end of April, and they had really good attendance of that, and Aaron Bobby did a fantastic job of coordinating that as usual. As you can hear, the middle schoolers are working on Aladdin Junior, and that's actually going to be performed this weekend, Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. Mr. Elmer also took some students, TJ Pete and Daniel Kaskashkian, Ashley Alvarez Chavez, Addison Lane, and Sam Adamchek. They were named scholars by the National Cyber Scholarship Foundation. So those kids actually competed against a couple thousand high school students, and they qualified for this National Cyber Scholarship, which is a really big deal for us. And we earned actually 5 of the 10 available scholarship awards out of thousands that attended. So that was a big thing for us actually to take part in that. The only thing he's got in here about the activity fee committee is that he is putting together what the recommendations are as far as the activity bus and the new fee and when that will go into play. And he's going to send that to the governance committee as soon as he puts it together. We had students who actually went last Thursday to the charter school rally in Dover, and he attended, and Shadi attended as well, to kind of show support or actually show they're against the new regulations for new admin who are being required to be certified in charter schools. Testing is what's been going on the past few weeks in both campuses. So we've had all of our SBAC testing, which is for ELA and math, and that's officially complete. All 100% of all of our students complete their testing in that, and the scores are starting to trickle in. So that will all actually be in within the next couple weeks or so. They're now testing in social studies and science. They completed at the elementary level already, but now they're working on that in eighth grade and high school. 497 AP exams were taken the past 2 weeks. That's, I think Eric already shared this, but last year we had 193. This year we had 497. So that's been a big deal, and the kids have worked really, really, really hard. So that's been, the AP program this year has been really successful. And the feedback that we're getting from kids, I've debriefed them after the exams, they have all felt very prepared, and they've felt really good about each of the exams that they took. So I think that was a huge win for us.
200.
Yeah.
No,
they still are taking the SAT. So the AP, they're taking. The state still requires the SAT. That's our accountability measure for our high scores. So regardless of what colleges do, until the state changes that law, we will give the SAT with essay.
Does that get publicized? Is that a state thing so they can publicize it?
It does get publicized, yes.
Yes, but we are one of only 12 states who still uses it as an accountability measure. Most states have done away with it. So
how did we do? What did we do last year?
Last year we did fantastic. We should be getting the results, I think, in the next week or so, probably, for our SAT this year, and we'll see how we did compared to last year. Last year we saw, I think, a 50-point growth from the previous year in both math, and it's about 50 in both math and reading. So our kids do really well in the SAT, especially the essay. Their writing skills are phenomenal. So, but the AP, we've had such a growth in AP because we are doing away with the IB program. So that's the alternative. And I would just say that the kids thus far have really enjoyed the AP classes that we've been offering. So
what are the, what do we know what test scores are yet?
Oh, no, not until July 6th or 7th.
So those are, excuse my ignorance, but when you say AP exams, those are like the ones that are on Saturdays that all the kids can go to?
No.
These are just at the end of courses.
These are the end of course for any AP course that they've taken.
But these are where they get a 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah. And they can get college credit depending on.
So you don't
on...
have to go take it like, you don't take it like you took the SAT anymore.
No, no.
That's how old I am.
Yeah, no, they all take it here. We actually had 8 students who took it as an exam only student, which means they're either in AC and they thought they wanted to try our AP Lang exam, or they are in an IB course, but they wanted to see how they did on the AP exam. So we'll see how they did as well. So, but that's wrapping up. 1 through 5.
It's 5.
Yeah. 3 is typically what they call passing, but most colleges don't accept anything less than a 4 for a college credit. So
this is the last year we're teaching this year.
This is it. The last IB exam was today. Yes.
Those results come out.
Yes, they'll come about the same time as the AP results, so we'll see.
I've needed that number since I found that out.
Well, we actually have 5 students who took between AP and IB exams. I counted it up today because IB exams are 2 or 3 sittings. But we had 5 students who sat for 15 different exams over the last 2 weeks.
So as part of your update is your update. So I wanted to turn it over to you, so, and then we can move from that into finance.
So my board update for is we had some questions at the last board meeting about year over year, what's happening when we send out a Google form and we're asking families to let us know if they intend on returning to Sussex Academy. This is showing you what happens in the spring versus what's happened in the summer over the past 3 years. So on the far left, you can see in spring of 21-22, 9 students who were 8th graders, but it impacts 9th grade. So that's why it's in the 9th grade column. 9 8th graders said we're not coming back to Sussex for 9th grade. And then over the summer, you can see what happens. So people commit to us and then they leave in the summer. And you can see we had a total of 90 families in the 21-22 school year who ultimately left Sussex Academy. Last summer, you can see intent to return, what's happened. Again, you have to look at the impacted year, which means the 2 fifth graders, it impacted 6th grade that they were not returning. 15 8th graders in the spring told us they weren't going to come back and be in 9th grade. But then in the summer, 18 additional 8th graders who would have been 9th graders left. So you can see in total for that year, we were at 86. So in 21-22, we had 90 students leave. And in 2023, we had 86. And then right now, we're at 16 8th graders who said they're not going to come to Sussex Academy for high school in 9th grade. And 3 9th graders are not going to be 10th graders next year. They're going to go other places. And so we'll monitor this summer and we'll see, you know, what kind of trend we're having here, if there is a trend, 21-22, I think, was difficult. That was COVID year. So it's still on here because we're going to do trajectory. That's as far back as the data that I have from Andrea and presenting and showing here.
The family is in the summer that advised that they're not going to be coming back. Mm-hmm. How is that communicated to the school? Is there a reach out from the school over the summer? I can't remember. Or is it just you rely on the families to advise you?
Yeah, the families come and tell us and they say, we're going to withdraw and take our kid to CAPE. Then we give them an exit survey asking for any additional information. As to why they're leaving, if there's anything they want to share, if they'd like to have a personal phone call from Eric, or that's all in this survey.
Does the board get to know what the survey results are?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Part of it, I think, is athletics.
Sports.
The boys in the ninth grade wanting to go in the ninth grade.
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting to see. It's just a supposition. I'd really like to see.
Yeah, we have data from last summer from those families who left. We sent them the survey, they filled it out. So we do have that data. And it wasn't as heavy on sports as I thought it was going to be.
How many actually filled the survey out versus how was if?
That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head.
I just wondered,
right.
If 86 left, if 6 filled it out versus 46, that's also because you may.
We would only have the 64 because that's the only time we interview. That's the only exit. Yeah. Yep.
So 64, but if half of them fill it out, but
right.
Over those reasons that
true.
Were,
Is it an online survey?
Yeah, it's on a Google form. And Andrea gives it to them immediately while they're, withdrawn. I've tried to ask Andrea, see if they'll fill it out while they're here, because once they go home, it's hard to get a response.
What's the overall attendance or the overall population of the school in 2021-22? Is it 1,000?
We're right under 1,000. We're right under 1,000.
Okay, so we're looking at 8%.
This school like that. Year. This school year, we're right under 1,000.
Okay.
Now what we want to get to is this. This is how Andrea and I are monitoring students coming into our school. Who's leaving? So you can see in kindergarten, there's going to be two students who are not being promoted. So we only invited 42 families in. Every grade level from K to 5 is going to be at 44 seats. So we know we still have 6 more families to invite to get to 44 on that right-hand column for K to 5 collectively. Now, when you get down to 6th grade, we know that we have 45 5th grade families coming to us. So they're going to be in 6th grade. We invited in the green column an additional 82 families. So next year's 6th grade population at this time is at 126. So every time someone withdraws, these numbers change. And then we start inviting more families in and the green column will change. And this is where Andrew and I are meeting every week to determine where to invite families and pull from. So you can see right now, our student count is at 1143 for next school year. We know we got to invite 6 more elementary. That's going to be a given. We'll be at 1149. We can take 1171, which means we still have 22 families we can invite in. At the secondary campus, we have some students who are not going to get promoted. We have 5 sixth graders who are not going to get promoted, which impacts our 7th grade number. I'm going to have meetings with the families that the students aren't getting promoted. Some of those families will likely not return. So until we have that under control and really know, I won't know exactly how many new families to invite in at particular grade levels.
For anybody that's not promoted in the higher grades, is that because of how they're classified, because of English, where ninth grade English not passing, so they're not promoted to 10th grade. So some of the ninth graders could be
officially 10th graders in all but their English.
That's exactly it.
Those numbers are very low, and I was assuming that might be why they just did pass one course that kept them from being converted to that. Correct.
Is that low, that there's 5-6 graders that aren't getting promoted?
I think it's high compared to previous years, but that was mostly because of COVID too. We had very, lower, we
and I
more tolerant.
I didn't give the answer to this, but yeah. Are those 5 kids who went to Sussex Academy Elementary for 5th grade?
No.
None of them? Not one?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
That's good. I mean, it's not good, but it's good that.
When, as I said before, we have 21 different feeder elementary schools coming into us into 6th grade. And
you don't know where their performance is. I
know the 5th graders. I've met them and their parents personally already within the last 3 months.
It impacted them greatly for 3rd grade, which
sure.
We know is a critical year. So I think that kind of.
Some of these.
The aftermath of COVID.
Really good considering.
Yeah.
If you factor all that in, those numbers are fairly low in consideration of where.
Our 6th grade teachers are some of the hardest working people I've ever worked with. They really, really work with our students and our families. Their communication is amazing.
Hey, Sherry, where's that 6 coming from for elementary to get?
Oh, yeah. So every grade K-5 should be at 45. So that 41 in 2nd grade, that's 3 kids there. Then in 3rd grade, there's 2, that's 5. And then in 5th grade, we need to add one more, that's 6 kids.
Okay, gotcha. Cool.
Yeah.
When you say invite them, you're going to invite the parents in to see if their kids want to enroll.
Right, so we'll go to our wait list. Yeah.
Still a lottery.
Yeah.
I like your word, invite. Sounds better.
Well, that gets us to our onboarding process. So I have an update on our onboarding initiatives. So as you know, we're doing one-on-one onboarding sessions with all new families coming to us. We've conducted 33 onboarding sessions for our new families who are in grades 9 to 12. We've had 75 onboarding sessions for non-SA elementary students in grades 6 to 8. We've had 18 with our current SA elementary families. With 6, that leaves us 62 left to schedule. From that green column where I showed all the invited students, we're left with 62, but we have 22 scheduled for the rest of this week. So that leaves us 40 plus any new invitees that we have to bring on board to fill that 22 gap. So by the end of the week, we're gonna have 148 onboarding sessions completed, all new students. And we have had some families really say some great things. So we measure and we send a survey out after to ask them what their experience is like, because this is a new process for us. And the only one person said that it was not helpful, but their response was, I think it was great for entertaining the 6th grade. So to answer no, but give that response, I don't know, maybe someone else can help me connect dots. I'm not sure.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. But I wanted to share that. But here's a lot of our positive comments that parents are saying and writing in and taking the time to give this kind of feedback.
And y'all probably
saw awesome.
The email that I did to, I wanted to make sure that we thank you, because in my mind, this is a supportive culture that is being built at the school, right? The teachers that are going above and beyond needed to be recognized. And I know you
did. Thank you for sending that.
I wanted to make sure y'all knew I did that on your behalf. I wanted to make sure they stood out. Just so happened it also was Teacher Appreciation Week, and I thought they needed to be thanked. So I just felt since it was before we actually met, to go ahead and make sure we said that.
sets a good tone to do one-on-one.
It's been a really good experience for our teachers and for our new families. Even our Sussex Academy Elementary families coming over and staff members who have kids at the elementary. And
you've had some families that already have kids in the high school that have even came, and they were like, oh, wow, this is much different than what those some parents have told me that.
Yep. So good stuff. Any questions? That's it.
Anything else?
The only question I had was on the unit count that we had, I think at 1143, is that the number we're using for the budget assumptions going into next year?
No.
Yeah, 1143.
No, we really want to use 1,171.
Okay.
I can change it to 1,143 or 1,149. But that will lose a whole unit. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I just want to get clarification on what number we were using in the okay. budget. Okay. 1171.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great segue, and I know you've got a short runway here, Michelle, so we're going to turn it over to you to talk about finances, and if we need to follow up with Brittany on anything, if you need to.
Okay,
that's fine, but I just wanted to let you go ahead and start, and then we'll circle back around for any additional updates.
Okay, that's fine. Hey, Sherry, can I share my screen, please? There we go. Thank you. All right, these are the results from April year to date. 83.33% of the year has gone by, as you can see. Overall, from a revenue standpoint, we are at 99.7% of our revenue. We did receive $23,357 for additional monies. That's part of the one-time 27th pay. So that came in last month. And then we received $9,270 in interest. So Andy still has not transferred over the $169,000 from the activity fee. So taking all of that into consideration, projecting that we'll be about $200,000 over our budget. And this is also contingent on, I took the pool revenue down because I understand that the pool was closed for a while because of repairs. So I reduced the funds received for the pool. And we still may meet the $410,000 budget, but I just wasn't sure. Any questions about our revenues?
Yes, okay. I have a question.
Yes.
Yes, I have more questions about expenditures. I'll wait until you get the expenditure payment.
Okay. So in terms of payroll, right now I'm forecasting, and this is a very soft number, of being maybe $92,000 over. I'm trying to get a feel for the coaches' stipends. I know that we paid out about $50-some thousand the first paycheck in May. And I'm just not sure what's left over for the rest of the school year. And Franny hasn't been able to, because she's working from home right now, give me a good number. And some of our coaches haven't completed their paperwork so that they could get paid. So I have some fluff in this number. And so I don't think it's going to be this number, but I just wanted to think about the worst case. Does that make sense? It's really the coach's stipends that I just don't know what's going on with those.
The main issue I have, Michelle, is why do we spend 81.8% of our revenue on payroll? That seems like it's 5% or 6% too high relative to prior years here and relative.
No. This is the year to date. We're at 81.8% of our budget. And this is on target since 83.33% of the year has gone by.
What will be at the end of the year?
Right now, I'm looking at maybe about 101% if this number is firm, but this number is jello. It's not going to exceed this. It really should.
So I think what Joe is asking, if you look back,
we're still going to be around 76-77%.
That number is not a percentage of revenue. What it's saying is that if our budget was $1 million, we've spent $800,000 of the $1 million. So we've spent $81,000 of the money we've spent 81% of the money we budgeted for salaries. It's not compared to revenue at all.
That percentage line represents something different than the two other percentage lines that are in that document that are highlighted in blue, which is what you were referencing. The 76. Right. I'm following.
This column says year to date obligated percentage of the budget.
Well, knowing that we have been running a deficit for a year or two, and we're expecting one this year, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we think the culprit is? How do we get our hands around what we're overspending on?
The major culprit is unfunded positions that we do not get any state funding for. That's the major culprit.
But we always have that. That's life in
except I think what we have now are some positions that we hired outside of a unit count. So money has to come straight from our local funds, whereas we're not getting state funding for that.
Right.
So I think that's what we're faced with, is some people that were hired last year that were not unit count positions. So 100% of the money for those salaries has to come from other funds that we have.
So the board needs to be involved, and are we going to hire funded positions, and what do we pay them?
Right.
I don't get into the graphs here, but
right, that
more control over what our budget is for payroll, whether it's funded or unfunded.
And our new policies, the 600 policies that we approved a couple of months ago, go right to that point where any unfunded, any positions, new positions that are being brought forward by the head of school that are not included in our current budget need to be approved by us. So that's covered for our future.
I should read those.
You did. You did.
You're even on our committee.
And as part of this, the plan for next year will be presented as part of next month's budget, which will be the final budget for next year. So Eric will present what his plans are, and then that will allow us to make a decision on the financial.
It's the preliminary budget for next year.
Right.
Yeah, not the final. Yeah.
Michelle, can I ask you a question? Like in other schools that you're aware of, what is an industry standard number for salaries as a percent of total budget? Ours is around 76. Like what's best
it should
practice?
Be about 65 to 70.
So 10% is a big difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's harder, as we've said before, down in Sussex County, because outside of Cape and Indian River, the other districts don't spend much on their students on a per student basis.
Yeah.
Do you think
the
impact comes? So if we had an elementary school on this campus, we would be funded differently as a sole entity than we are now. But because we have two campuses, we have a higher need, which actually generates the need for more resources, which
you know, do you think any of that factors into this?
Well, the increased resources will come from your additional facility costs, because like the cost for the head of school and your business office, that's spread out over more students now. So as long as you keep your administrative overhead low, as low as possible, that becomes more cost effective, because if you have 300 students in the elementary school, roughly 280 or what have you, that's 280 more kids that you get to spread some expenses over. But the second point of that, though, is that you have a totally different building with additional telecommunications, you know, because you have additional system over there, you have additional utilities that if it was one large building, maybe the increase wouldn't be as much.
We're not changing that.
No, we're not. Yeah. So another question or clarity that I want to make sure is, we also need to make sure, and I know y'all know this and the building more than we will, is that there's a thin line between not hiring some of those positions and making sure we have enough staff to fully meet the needs of our students. Because absolutely, the number one thing we have to do is meet the needs of our students. So it depends upon what kind of staff, not that we're hiring staff, but what kind of staff we're hiring to meet those needs. I think that's an important distinction. So,
right.
I agree with you. I just was trying to figure out.
Yeah. And then I just have to say this one thing, which I'm not saying that the program should not exist, but I just have to say it. Unfunded for high schools, if you want to be competitive to attract high school students and keep them, is the athletic budget. We get absolutely no funding for that. And that's over $400,000.
Is that you ever do? Do they get no funding for it?
No one gets funding for it. But
they have their boosters, plus they do a lot of, they have staff, unit count staff members acting as coaches and different, like their athletic director is like a unit count position, and they do
history professor or
something. Yeah.
We do the same thing, but they have their own transportation. So
get buses.
They pay their bus drivers maybe an overtime rate, but they're using their own buses for student transportation, so they don't have to worry about that additional cost as much.
And I was really, and mine was, you know, talking about the unit count discussion we had prior to Michelle, because I know the way the code is written, we don't get an administrator for both buildings, but we need one for both buildings, which is an important part. So, and nurse, mm-hmm, is the same way. We have the whole, right, the whole idea of having a nurse at two locations, which I think we're required to have a nurse in both locations by code, but
right,
they don't, mm-hmm, give us a unit for both location, even so they require. So those are updates that I really think we probably need to use through the charter school network to actually basically ask for additional units on the charter school side to actually fix the problem. Because if not, we're just, again,
you've asked for that for years.
Yeah, get in line.
And it really comes down to the differences in the charter school law versus the K-12 law too.
Right. And the K-3 actually, each student brings you more money than a high school student does. Which it should, because you need smaller class sizes. It's just based on class size.
The issue too, if we had 1,000 students, we were missing 150 heads in here. We brought that up in the past. You had 1,000 students last year. Sorry.
This school year or last school?
Last year.
This year we have 1,106 total on both campuses.
What's our maximum enrollment capacity?
71.
1,171.
We're missing that many people that we've gotten.
Well, that's only effective this coming school year because we applied for a minor modification.
A minor mod.
We didn't have that many spaces last year.
Yeah, do a minor mod. We actually found out that we didn't need to do it because we can do the percentage difference, which Ed brings up a valid point. We should have tried to do that prior. We shouldn't have waited. That's money left on the table, or units left on the table, or assistance. It doesn't matter how. It may be a resource. It may be money. It depends on how we look at it. Be a teacher. I mean,
as long as we have our eye on the economies of scale, it's correct. Very important that we understand how many teachers and staff members we need to educate our kids. Correct. It's easy to say, let's just add seats, but you got to look at that and decide, okay, if we add these seats, do we have to add additional staff?
Agreed. And some are, you bring it up with the nurse, you can't not have. So some we have to have, and some we got. That's a very valid question or answer.
I think there's got to be a person you're hiring for a need that we have. Do we have to hire somebody who has 25 years of teaching experience and makes 25%, you know, some amount more? Mm-hmm. Or should we have a rookie or a close to rookie? I mean, who's all excited and enthused. The vibe that you have at this school is not, it's an old stodgy faculty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a young, aggressive faculty. They don't know what the mistakes they're making, so they're going to make them. We do have some older folks.
Darius. Some new hires because of salary. Okay. You go to Sussex Tech and make $8,000 more a year starting out. And we lost them over the summer for hiring.
Can't we get that information to the Board of Education? So it's not fair. Mr. X or Miss X, we both tried to hire. Sussex Tech pays them $48,000. We can only pay them $40. What's wrong with that picture?
But it seems like it's even more handicapped than that because we're paying less. But our percentage of revenue is even more. We're at 75, where everybody else is at 65, and they're paying their people more.
Yeah. It's only going to get worse.
So it's like a double.
Let's close down then. It's got to get better.
It does, but part of what we did by being a charter school is we said we will be governed by this approach. And I hate to say that, but like we're saying, we want the benefits of being a state agency, but we don't want to do all these other things. So, in that instance, we're kind of like stuck. Because
I think we have to go. We have to, like, the nurse. I feel like there's a grant somewhere for a nurse. There has to be.
If you really want blood to fight a battle, it's why charter schools don't get a wellness center funded.
Yeah,
that's the battle to fight because you're talking about all of your medical expenses, all your nurse expenses would be paid for by that wellness center, and state refuses to fund wellness centers for charter schools. So if you really want to put your backing behind some kind of charter school initiative, that's the one, because that would save charter schools hundreds of thousands.
Your board president will be at the School-Based Wellness Center Alliance meeting next week with Senator Carper, and I think it's one other person. So I'm actually now on the School-Based Health Center Alliance, and we'll try to push those types
of things.
Huge. Yeah, good.
Take up a big part of your facility, and every school that I've worked at, you still had a school nurse, even though you had a wellness center.
Yeah, but you still get a lot of funding and support. Yeah. It also supports some of the mental health initiatives, too.
There's a big change in pushing that. There's at least three or four laws right now around behavioral health specialists, mental health days. And I think there was one more that came up at our recent meeting. There's a lot going into that to kind of help us in this area. We may be getting off of your report, Michelle. So back to
that's okay. Yes, I mean, so for our non-payroll costs, as you can see right now, year to date through the end of April, we're at 86.6%, which is slightly over to 83.33%. But this includes the encumbrances of $274,000. So we're right on target. And when we combine everything, Right now, I'm looking at us actually coming on target with our expense budget. It'll probably be more money unless there's some other fixed costs that I'm not aware of. I try to update my Outlook with all the invoices that have been paid through May 11th to make my Outlook as current as possible. So right now, we're looking at running a deficit of almost $400,000, but it's significantly less than our budget. And our days cash still remains almost 42 days cash left. That has not changed. And again, this is based on FSF dollars. It does not count the PNC accounts. So
remind us of the magic number of days.
We have to at least be 30 without being in real trouble. The target is 75. And we're not going to get to 75 overnight. And I don't know if we could ever really get, I mean, we'll get there, but it may take us 10 years.
Can you add that target to the spreadsheet so we have it as a reference for the future?
I will do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'll just put it here so I'll remember to put it somewhere. And so that's where we are. So we're very, we're very close to our budget overall. As you can see, some numbers are up and some are down, but I think our biggest challenge right now is just going to be next year's budget. And with the pay increases that we're going to have to take into account. And Brittany, I guess we need to look at a pay scale.
What do you mean?
In order to figure out what we're going to really offer the teachers next year for pay, right? Well as everybody else. I mean, we put in the 3%, but the question is the 6%.
Yeah. Well, when do we have to do the 6%? Is it next school year?
It's FY24. Mm-hmm. And the effective rate, which the discussion needs to be, are we going to increase the local portion of a teacher's salary, the 30%?
And we're only getting the state portion.
Right.
Not getting the local portion.
Are you talking about the local portion of the teachers that have a state portion, or are you talking about the fully funded local portion?
The local portion. Okay, for example, if we did, and this is just a hypothetical, if we gave a teacher the 6% on the state portion and they're going to get a 3% anyway, and then we say, well, we'll match the 3% on the local portion also, the effective increase is about 7.33%.
I thought we had talked about this previously, and we said we didn't really see a way that we could match.
I wasn't at that board meeting. That's why I'm asking the question. Okay.
Yeah, I think that what we had talked about previously was for the preliminary budget, at the very least, to not worry about the increase, because we're not even going to know what the increase is, to just use step raises. And then whenever we determine what the increase is, that chunk of money, whether it's a 6% increase, will be fully given to the teachers, but it may result in more like a 4.9% increase because we won't be able to match it on the local side.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just concerned with the fact that school opens when the teachers have to come back. August something. Mm-hmm. The teachers are going to want to know how much money they're making. That's all.
I share your concern. I don't.
Okay. That's
I think that's a decision that like Eric has to make, but I feel very nervous making that kind of decision without all of the information.
We will never have the final revenue number. And this is the challenge that charter schools are in. We will never have the final revenue until after the September 30th count.
But we will know after the governor's budget is passed what the stipulations are. As in what
final
increase they're suggesting, and that would be June 30th.
Right. And normally the one in patches, maybe I'm wrong here, the one that they normally float in January, the general increase is what normally passes most of the time. And this year it's 3%. Prior years, a lot has been 2%. And
there are years. Just because of the shortage, I felt that there was a big push to go for the higher with a set minimum for all teachers. So I wasn't concerned about what we would do percentage-wise, because if we're getting a percentage from the state, we should pass that through to our teachers. I wanted to make sure that the teachers that were also funded locally got the same pay as their peers, because if not, we're going to have a bad culture amongst folks within the building. And that's really what I was more concerned about. So that if we have someone like we had talked about earlier, if we got a nurse here and a nurse over there and we're paying one out of the local funds, that they need to be on the same pay scale, regardless of the fact that we're fully funding someone. It doesn't,
right.
I mean, if not, then we're going to have a lot of, you know, you ask somebody to show up for something to fill in. Well, you know what? I'm not saying that that will happen. I'm not saying people will do that. I'm just saying that that's the type, and we don't want that type of work environment. We want a very supportive work environment that people are want to be a part of.
Right.
That's a good thought. But if you don't have the money, you're just digging deeper into a hole that you're already in.
Which is why we got to look at the other expenditures and figure out where to, I guess, I don't know.
Well, I'm trying to figure this out. The state has said 6% on the state money for all teachers. Charter schools get the same much.
It's an increase of 6% for teachers, nurses, and counselors. That's
right. And local districts. Is the district. Have the districts said what they're going to do or not?
The bigger districts are looking to match it.
Are looking to match 6%? You shouldn't.
Regardless, we won't get any more local money than our per pupil allocation from each of the districts.
Correct.
That based number is not going to change. This year.
Based on what they spent this year. For
the teacher in Laurel.
The teacher in Laurel at a Laurel school district is going to get whatever his district decides to match the local funds. They get more than we do.
So if we have a Laurel student in our school,
mm-hmm.
he gets zero. And if he went to Laurel school, he'd get $100 or whatever. Not him, but the school would get paid on the local level.
Well,
what I think you're saying, but
the funds for that child come with that child at the rate that they have for tuition at that school. And then it would be different at Laurel than it would be from CAPE or IR or wherever. That's not impacted by any of this. So we still get that money as part of the unit count process.
I understand that. Yeah. But now we're talking about raising that number in the local district. Do we get the same thing anybody else would get for a student?
This is from that unit. We would pay a teacher from that unit, which a teacher is a unit from there. And you would take that teacher and you would set up their local pay. And it's a percentage of state versus local. What I think we're saying is we would keep the state. We would pass through what the state gives. So that's not going to cost us. It's just we're giving them the money that the state's given us to give to
them. That's great.
We wouldn't give them any additional money locally because we don't have the money to give it to them.
So like every teacher salary is made up of state money and local money. Right. So the state money is getting increased. And we're going to get that. The local money is not being increased. We're going to get the same amount of local funds because that's determined by
the previous year's expenses that they spent. So we're always 1 year behind.
Per pupil.
So this year, if the local community decides to pay 6% on top of what, just like the state does, because it's Cape, and that's right. What they want. We have to wait a year to get to that 6%.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
So we got a timing issue.
No.
Yeah, it's been that way.
But we don't.
Oh yeah, because we're getting the next year's the revenues.
Yes.
I see where that's coming in.
Right.
Yeah, I'm following you now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm following you and Michelle now, but I think what we're talking about is something, a decision we got to make regardless of all of this.
We can't, the decision has already been made. Yeah. We don't have the money to match it. You know, right. We can't pull the money out of thin air.
But for the teachers in the room, if we tell you, you guys know of this, the 6% that a 6% increase in local funding for the public schools, public district schools, they're going to get this year, 2023. Are you willing to stay here? You're going to get that much next year. And there may be no other increases. So
we're not going to get that much next year. We're not seeing an increase in the amount spent per pupil. What we're seeing is an increase in the local portion of their pay, of teacher pay. That's a completely separate.
No. The increase in the local district's teacher pay, the local part does go into the total expense calculation for next year because it's based on what they spent to educate their students.
Yeah.
What she's saying is next year's tuition cost basically will go up because it's going to cost more per student, which means next year, as part of our unit count process, we're going to get more money.
But we're never going to be at a point here fiscally where we can afford to match a 6% increase on the local side.
You're absolutely right.
All of the surrounding districts we were sitting in a meeting 2 months ago where Amy told us that Indian River has already told their employees that on the local portion, they are seeing a 9% increase.
But to be fair, that was the teachers union, and we never got any confirmation that that is actually happening. I mean, I remember her saying that, and I it did sound.
But they sent that out. When a union sends that out to their employees, they don't just send that out to their employees unless they can say that that's going to happen. So if that were not to come to pass for Indian River School District and their union, I would be shocked because that's not how unions do business.
Mm-hmm.
And we already know Sussex Tech has also.
We're going to send you 9%, but you're going
to
we're going
to yeah, send like they would send out an email to everybody saying that, and then all of a sudden be like, just kidding, guys.
Sort of pretty certain that Cape, Indian River, and Sussex Tech are the ones that I know of have already said,
same.
We got you. We're matching what the state's giving you.
Sussex Tech is going to match the highest cell in the county across their entire pay scale.
Because they're struggling. Everybody's struggling to get teachers.
Right.
So they're willing to
pay. Right. So what we're doing here as a teacher, I am making a choice between staying here and making that decision based on things other than money, like the environment and the students I serve and the supportive families we have here. Mm-hmm. That's what we're selling to people and as an organization hiring people. And that's what we have to focus on. We can't offer people $10,000 more, but we can offer people an environment where the focus is on academic and not discipline issues or something like that we see that are issues in surrounding districts.
And to be honest, we've always been in this position and we've always, that's the culture we've always had. And we always get good teachers because they value that.
It's been the number one recruit that you've had to show has been just that, I do believe, like at least in the extent that my family has been involved in your schools.
In fact, I think before we did the big salary leveling a number of years ago, our salaries were so much less than, like horribly less than the other districts. And we still had amazing, amazing teachers. So I'm not saying we have to stop. We can't stop working to keep increasing what we can pay.
I think what's important to staff, because Eric shared, he was very transparent with staff in a meeting last week and said that this was definitely not definite, but he shared that the board's intention was to hopefully pass, you know, the 3% to everyone and then that 6% from the state just to teachers. And I think for staff, what's important is to know that even though charter schools can, they're not going to take some of that state money for the district. I think that is what's most important to staff, that they understand that the board is willing to push through whatever the state gives, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's more important. Mm-hmm. I think if the board ever decided we're going to keep some of the state portion to pay for other things, I think that would be,
So we're better not do that.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think there's been a discussion on doing that piece. And I think because we can't do anything locally, we feel like we will give everything we can that the state gives us in the other category.
Okay. Are there any other questions about our April results?
Really?
At the hard stop at 5:30, I apologize.
Bonus 1 year.
Any other questions?
Any other
questions? Just get the revenue question. Revenue up and the expenses down. That's all we need from you.
Yes.
By next month, please.
Yes. And the state report, do you vote on this? Did you send that to them, Brittany? The web report? Is that like this one?
You can cover it.
I'm trying to find it. I'm sorry. Thought I had it here.
Brittany's still on?
I'm here.
So this is a summary again that has to go on the board. I mean, the website.
Vote on that.
Yeah, this is the one you have to vote on.
Okay, I make a motion that we vote on that report.
Is there any seconds?
Second.
Any further discussion on the report that is presented in front of us?
This is the report that gets published on the website.
Correct. They call it the web report in the past or historically. No further discussion?
No.
Then we'll vote. All in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Aye. Any abstained? Then it passes unanimously.
Okay. Well, I have a great rest of your meeting and I'll see you next month.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So part of the head of school report has always been